We're barroom buddies, and that's the best kind.
Nobody messes with a buddy of mine.
What we're trying to tell you, Ultimate Warrior, what we're trying to tell you, Texas Tornado, in a creative kind of way, is what Mr. Perfect and myself have is not just a business bond. What this is a family affair. So right here in the Nassau Coliseum, in front of 20,000 inner-city sweat hogs, Mr. Perfect and Ravishing Rick Rude are going to systematically take apart the Ultimate Warrior
and the Texas Tornado.
This Monday night, everybody come down to the Nassau Coliseum to take a look at the big shots of the World Wrestling Federation.
What?
I said big shots! And what I mean by big shots is Ultimate Warrior and Texas Tornado, the two most physical people in the World Wrestling Federation, are coming for one thing, and that's to destroy you.
You see, this team is
absolutely
perfect.
They got it.
We're talking wrestling on Baby Oil and Blow. We're talking wrestling, sleepers and drop toe holds, Ken Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw.
Told you to get rid of those sideburns.
That's right, because it's Baby Oil and Blow, which makes me the big O, baby. And
again?
You, sir, you are going to be...
My part never changes.
I thought about this, and you already kind of made the joke earlier when we were talking in private.
Okay.
Off microphone.
I'm supposed to tell people about that.
This week we're going to be the outsiders, but the thing is we're both Scott Hall.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
You are Nate Adams.
I'm going to be the Louis Spicoli to your Scott Hall.
Oh, wow.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody.
Oh, woof. That means I just get close to dying, and you really do die.
It turns out there ain't no cure for the summertime blues because we've been trying to cure it with way too many, boozy barbecues and...
Boozy
booze trips on booze buses.
Boozy.
Various booze bars.
Church outings.
Shaboose bars.
Boozy children's parties.
Late night chili cheese dogs, as far as the eye can see.
I got heartburn thinking about it.
Starting to feel like one of these fat Americans. You know what I'm talking about?
I need to get, the angioplasty?
That could possibly be a thing that you would
need.
I could
artery
see that.
Opened up.
You're gonna
just
have a
so
stroke. I've been looking at the veins in your forehead lately.
Oh, yeah?
They're just pumping away, man. Just pumping away.
That's not a good sign.
I don't know why they're so overworked.
That's probably the awful things I've been doing to myself.
Yeah, we got through the 4th of July.
Barely.
Rest of July, I'm calling it right now.
That's a crapshoot.
I'm going on a detox.
Wow.
Officially going on a detox.
I'm not giving up yet.
I got a single mom on Facebook. She's got these essential oils for me. Apparently these essential oils are going to knock all these fucking toxins right out of me. I don't know if I'm going to poop them out or sweat them out or what, but they're going to be gone. I'm going to just having like blood and guts in me again.
That's
just like
cool.
Straight up blood and guts. Not all these toxins that I got in me right now.
I kind of like my toxins.
Be back on top of the world in no time.
Like just that episode of Rick and Morty where Rick loses his toxins and he's not the same guy anymore.
That sounds terrible.
I feel like that's what I'd become.
My toxins give me my edge, man.
Yeah. If I lost mine, I'd be, I don't know, polite.
Can't be vaporizing peppermint oil.
Nice.
It's going to make me lose my edge,
I'm gonna
man.
I'm going to vape that pep oil, brah. Got to vape me some pep oil.
Yes. I can't see how vaping something would make anyone lose some of their edge.
How's
vaping's fucking awesome.
How's that single mom look?
Oh, she looks real bad.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Hope she doesn't listen to the show.
No, she's not real. I'm not really on Facebook. This is all a fallacy.
Oh, yeah, you said Facebook.
All this stuff is
there.
Untrue.
You're not on there. Unless you're slaving away at the old Baby Oil and Blow social media, which you can reach us at any time.
Yeah.
Which we both feverishly work on.
We don't really check it or nothing, so I don't know if we're going to respond.
But we're trying to get...
But you can send us a message on there.
Hashtag throw your garbage.
That's right. There is a new initiative.
Yeah, and I'm not giving up on that one.
This is... Doubling down on our efforts to bring audiences throwing garbage into the ring back to pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Something that it's missed in the last 15 years or so. Sorely missed. It's not the same. It's not the same product, man.
Because modern day wrestling is not the same. And that's going to bring us right into our weekly modern day wrestling.
Pull this modern day wrestling back down into the trash with the rest of us down here.
Nate's modern day wrestling synopsis.
You're not going to make it respectable and sell it to all these big media companies. We're going to keep wrestling trashy, everybody.
Yeah. We got a lot to cover this week for modern day wrestling.
Garbage.
Where should we start?
I don't know. Who has watched any wrestling this week? We've had fireworks. Well, we've had barbecues. We've had booze tours.
Booze on booze.
Could you have possibly watched any modern wrestling?
Cody Rhodes and Kenny Omega made up.
Good for them.
They're friends now.
Okay, but they got turned on by the vicious Tongan faction inside the Bullet Club.
The Bullet Club firing squad.
Haku and his boys.
Correct.
I look forward to seeing New Japan go back to the roots of professional wrestling and separate these different factions by race again.
Yeah.
There's too much intermingling as far as I'm concerned, and I was getting confused. I was like, well, who do I cheer for and who do I boo?
Mm-hmm.
You got these Tongan guys in there hanging out with these white guys, and there's a Japanese guy in there. I don't even know what.
You got to get that.
As a white guy, who am I supposed to be cheering for?
Correct.
Now it's much more clear.
So you got that. You got Brock Lesnar returning to the UFC.
Okay.
Did you hear about that one?
No. But that's what he does. He goes back and forth, huh?
Not only is he going to do it, he's going to win a championship again.
Who is he going to fight?
DC, Daniel Cormier.
Well, that guy's a nerd. He'll put him down real quick.
Yeah.
Nerd!
Yeah.
Guy's just a big wrestling nerd that talks wrestling on Twitter. That's all I need to know about him.
Should really be wrestling 205, not heavyweight.
Big wrestling fan? Oh, you're going to lose a fight.
Yep. Brock Lesnar's going to squash him.
What's Brock Lesnar, like 45 now? 47?
Doesn't matter.
55?
Doesn't matter.
He could probably murder like anybody well into his 70s, I'm guessing. When he's like 75,
easily.
I'll still see him and be like, oh my God. No one should go anywhere near.
Why did you choose to fight
that
him?
That shaved ape.
Yeah.
He is just a strange, mutated mountain of muscles. Muscles on muscles.
And like anytime he loses, it's because like he tried too hard to kill you and like didn't fight clever enough, you know? Which is amazing. And now I'm going to make you pick a couple matches because you know what this weekend is?
What?
Extreme Rules.
No, that's not a
thing. Extreme. Is that the name of the pay-per-view? Yeah. Cool name.
Literally no one is going to watch that. It's not even a pay-per-view anymore.
No, it is.
It's a network special, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. This week's network
You're living in the
special.
Fucking past. I thought we were talking modern wrestling.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Pay-per-views used to be big, important things that like you'd have to pay a bunch of money to see because it'd like be a big event.
Yeah.
These are just things that they do near constantly probably even more boring
this
than
is
your
what the
typical
people are talking
weekly
about.
Television show.
So that's Nate's thoughts on modern-day wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
It's riveting. Real hot button issues.
I'm not going to do that anymore. This is dead in the water.
No, it's a weekly bit. But I tell you what, good news is that's over and done with, and now we can talk about what you're here to talk about.
We're doing a rundown.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We're going to do a rundown of primetime wrestling.
There it is.
March 7th, 1988.
Brought to you by Tom Cruise is born on the 4th of July.
It's essential viewing for anybody who wants to understand just this sweltering depression of
these past two
early
weeks.
July. Sometimes I wish that I had no working legs.
Yep.
And I'd have an excuse to just shut myself up.
I always wish for a
drink myself to death.
Tom Cruise in that movie, Lieutenant Dan crossover movie.
I'm sorry I ruined your New Year's Eve party, Lieutenant Dan. She tastes like cigarettes.
That'd be pretty cool.
I'd at least like to see like a Mad TV skit that crosses over the two of those things.
I'm going to relaunch Mad TV just so we can have it done.
That's a genius idea. The world right now is crying out for Mad TV to come back and satirize all this fucking bullshit we got going on in fake news every day.
Dave Herman and Will Sasso to
about time
make
Will
that
Sasso
skit
comes
happen.
Back and gives this liberal media the what for.
Yeah.
So brought to us by Mad TV, the rundown. First match, Hercules Hernandez in there versus Jerry Allen. Herc wins with a torture rack.
Mm-hmm. No, his patented vertical backbreaker.
Human torture rack.
Oh, wow.
Beautiful move. Second match, Hacksaw Jim Duggan is in there with the Outlaw Ron Bass. It's a genius nickname they gave him, the Outlaw. There hasn't been 1 million other guys in wrestling named that.
Nope.
Come on, give me a break. Okay, so what's going on in this match is Bass just gets his bullwhip and brings it into the match, and he starts strangling Hacksaw with it.
Correct.
So then Hacksaw gets a hold of his 2x4 and then starts just hitting Bass with the 2x4 while he's being strangled.
Like a real 2x4.
Yeah, and at the whole point while this is happening, the ref's just watching all this happen, and he doesn't call for the bell or doesn't call a DQ at any point. And then eventually Outlaw Ron Bass gets sick of getting hit by a board, so he just leaves.
Yeah.
And then Hacksaw is just like, you can't leave, so he tries to go after him.
I'm gonna get you, buddy.
And then they both just get counted out, and it's a double count out.
Yeah, makes sense.
Instead of a disqualification.
Mm-hmm.
Bad News Brown, hot new tough guy on the scene here in the WWF. He's in there versus Jim Stewart. He wins with the Ghetto Blaster.
They called him John Stewart, too. I'm not really sure what his name was.
I was thinking Jimmy Stewart the whole time.
Yeah, so was I.
That's a weird name.
And then later they were like, John Stewart, and it's like, well, which is it?
They never know. They never know. Scott Casey, he's in there versus Barry Horowitz. Scott Casey, what are your thoughts on him? Yeah, I don't have any either.
Yeah.
Thought he was going to be the jobber until I saw that he was in there against Barry Horowitz. And I was like, wow, jobber inception. Either way, Scott Casey wins with a little crucifix pin. After hitting a pile driver, he hits it with a pile driver. And then Horowitz is knocked out. Horowitz just gets right back up like nothing happened.
Yeah.
And then he does like a fancy little crucifix pin, like this is a Lucha Libre match or something. This was confusing.
Yeah.
It's very confusing. What's also confusing is that our next match, Joined in Progress, we watched the last 2 minutes of a time limit draw, Jake the Snake Roberts versus Dino Bravo.
Correct.
We're going to go into Brady Boone, one of our Oregon competitors.
Oh, yeah.
He's in our top two, for
sure. Oregonians.
Versus Iron Mike Sharp, the greatest wrestler in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Sharp wins, gets a big win after clocking Boone. With he sort of pantomimed that he had a foreign object, but then like the announcers weren't really sure if they were going to sell the idea that he had a foreign object or not. So it was sort of left up in the air.
He reached into his trunks. I mean,
so I don't know. Your choice. Either he hit him with a foreign object or he just won with one single knockout punch.
It could have been either one, really.
Could have been either one. Big main event. Finally, something worth sinking our teeth into. Two name tag teams. We got Demolition in there versus the Young Stallions. And Demolition, they're dastardly, so Axe gets the pin after Smash hits Romo with Fuji's cane. Right in the ribs with that cane, and then they pin him.
Those sons of bitches.
Dastardly.
Those sons of bitches.
You know, they're such talented competitors. I just don't feel like they really need to cheat.
Yeah, they don't
need
to be doing that stuff.
They do it anyways. It makes me so mad.
They don't need to be doing that bullshit.
So, I don't know if my sardonic delivery of that rundown... maybe sort of tipping the hat a little bit, showing you what direction this is going in, but this is a terrible show.
What?
No meat to it at all. All filler. Oh, let's get into this 5 count and start bitching about what a bad job they did this week.
Goodness, agree or disagree? Thought this was one of the most action-packed.
Last week, I was giving them props. I was like, everything on this show.
2 weeks ago.
The movie 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, everything makes sense.
Last week of this programming, I was like, everything had a purpose. Everything made some sense. It was like a real, and then this episode just took all that and just threw it in the toilet and pooped on it.
Yeah.
No storylines were developed here.
It was like,
nothing got anybody over. Nothing had any purpose.
Have fun watching this.
I don't know how we're each going to figure out 5 things to talk about.
Yeah, I just kind of winged it.
I'm struggling.
Let's see. My first, I'm going to skip to that Ron Bass versus Hacksaw match.
Okay.
I know it was...
That ECW brawl that they had?
Yeah, I know it was Joined in Progress.
1988 WWF?
I know it was Joined in Progress, and I never really cared for Ron Bass.
No, yeah, I've never seen much out of him that I...
Even when we watched like some of that 86 WCW or 85 WCW shit... Like
he could holler pretty well.
Brawl and like he was okay.
His mustache is real stupid looking. But I appreciate that.
I've always grown up thinking that I hate Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Mm-hmm.
And now it seems like the more matches I'm watching of his in 88, I'm like, This guy's mildly entertaining.
Yeah, this was, I feel
don't,
like,
I don't know if
the
this
tail
was,
end of him being entertaining.
I don't know if this was a case of, like, last time we watched him, I don't know if it was one man gang or whatever, but it was Styles.
Mm-hmm,
his
mm-hmm.
style worked with whoever he was
yeah,
in there.
Yeah,
with.
I think that was one man gang.
And it was like, I was upset that this was Joined in Progress, because at first I was like, oh, thank God it's Joined in Progress. I don't got to watch Hacksaw. But then they started, like, beating the shit out of each other, and I was like, I kind of want to watch that, you know? So I guess my first point goes to, I don't know if I'm going to like Hacksaw more and more.
You know, I really am.
Or if this is just kind of random shit.
I feel like when he first came in, you know, he had that big run in Mid-South where he was much more of a legit killer and just like a much more just like a rampaging badass than he was in the WWF. When he first came in, he had a little bit of that going on, and I feel like Vince was real high on him, and he was kind of putting him in a position to be like a legit upper card dude. And then I don't know exactly when it happened, but...
But the big drug arrest.
Yeah, he had that big drug arrest where him and Sheiky Baby got pulled over in a car.
You were getting a huge push when you first came to WWE, and then an incident occurred with the Iron Sheik. Do you want to just go into
that? Sure, yeah. The worst thing about that whole arrest with me and the Iron Sheik is that folks think me and the Sheik are friends. And we're not friends. I gave the guy a ride one day, you know, and long story short, I had some marijuana under my seat and we were drinking beers. And the trooper pulled us over. And it was in the 80s, you know, I wasn't drunk. I was just sipping on a beer. So I was surprised I got pulled over. He's like, you can't do that. I'm like, in New Jersey. I'm like, I live in Louisiana. I'm sorry. So I got to give you a ticket for that. And he said, well, he spelled the marijuana. He says, you got any marijuana? Or he said, you got anything else you want to tell me about? And I figured, well, he's going to search the car anyway. I said, yes, sir. I got a small amount of marijuana under my seat, you know. And, of course, boom, he hooked me right up and locked me up, put the cuffs on me. Then he pulled the Sheik out of the car, and the Sheik had 3 grams of cocaine.
Happy to be a biggest star, be a big Olympic champion, WWF champion, come to the Anniston, Alabama, show the kids, and still I have a lot of feeling, and still I care about my real wrestling fan. And the reason I get a couple bucks for charity, but Iron Sheik doesn't need it. Oil man, Persian gold, the money is not the point. The point is, I just want to tell American kids, don't take drugs and go pray. And go mosque and do practice and pray to God to you be like the world champion, Iron Sheik. If I make it from 10,000 miles till I come to the USA, all American greatest wrestling country, till I get my gold medal for pro and amateur, and I think I can teach the young generation, go practice, go pray, and dinner good, sleep good, don't smoke, don't take the drugs, to you be champion like Iron Sheik, and Allah and God and Jesus gonna help you if you want to. Ya Allah, Ya Muhammad.
You know, good guy and a bad guy driving in a car together, that was still pretty much a no-no at this point. And then, you know, they had a bunch of fucking drugs on him and shit, and Duggan ended up getting fired for a little bit. And then I think he came back, and there's much less of an opportunity for him to be that upper card guy, so he just... eased right into that niche of like, I'm gonna be the mid-card comedy guy coming out here and having boogers in my nose and giving everybody the thumbs up and saying ho.
He legitimately had a booger in his nose during this match.
He always had boogers in his nose, and it always would make me so uncomfortable watching when I was a little kid. I'd always just be thinking like, god damn.
Is this one of those guys at the grocery store that my mom tells me not to stare at?
1987 is when this Sheik and Duggan arrest happened. So we're after that at this point. So I feel like, I feel like this is the tail end. He's coming back and he's
doing something.
Maybe at this point he's got some hope still. Like, all right, that was a bump in the road. I'm back. But then he's going to figure out that, like, Vince isn't going to push me to the top anymore.
They haven't put those nice blue boner trunks on him
yet. Yeah, I'm just going to ride this out. I'm going to ride this cheap America, pro-America pop shit out for the rest of my career, and that'll be that. I'll be putting an ounce of effort into anything ever again.
Tough guy. Try me,
tough guy.
So that was my number one is, I don't know if I like Hacksaw or not.
Okay. We gotta sit down one of these days and watch some of that old Mid-South stuff.
Yeah.
I've only dabbled in it, but it all pretty
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, we need to get weird with it.
Him and Doug, or him and DiBiase together. I've seen a smattering of good shit.
We need to get weird with it.
My number one, I'm going back to that first match.
Okay.
Hercules versus Jerry Allen. Not much of a match, but
no.
Jerry Allen, a real big dude, and I thought it was smart.
Yeah.
Going into that big Hercules Ultimate Warrior feud, heading into WrestleMania 4, to put Herc in there with another big muscled
power
up dude.
Power versus power.
And show that, like, hey, the Warrior is a big muscled up dude, but Herc has got it. He knows how to deal with big muscled up dudes. Look at him throw around this Jerry Allen guy. Eventually he got him up in that torture rack, was breaking him, making him humble, dropped him in a little backbreaker nice deal, and it's just, I don't know. I wasn't like, oh, I loved watching this match, but I was like, maybe this is the only thing on this episode that made any kind of sense, because it took a guy who's got a feud going into the pay-per-view and showed him doing well against a guy with a similar style to who he's going to be wrestling.
Sure.
So I'm like, hey, maybe now he's going to beat the Warrior. Maybe the Warrior can't handle him.
I felt like Herc showed a little too much ass going into a pay-per-view match with Warrior.
It was a little bit back and forth.
It was a little too long-winded.
But I think definitely they had time to kill on this episode.
Sure, sure.
They were looking for things that were going to eat up time. Oh, are we supposed to have an episode of TV this week? We don't really have anything prepared.
I was genuinely impressed when Jerry Allen went for a crossbody off like the second rope or whatever.
And
Herc just caught him. Snatched him out of the air. And he was high on Herc, too.
He's all that big old boy.
He was
flying
like
through
way up over the shoulders. And like Herc
and
just like stopped cold and just grabbed him.
And then he just casually walked him to the edge of the ring and
just
dumped him over the top rope like a sack of shit.
Just potato sacked him just
impressive
right over.
Impressive strength, some good cocky heel stuff. So I came out of this thing a little bit higher on Herc.
Herc ain't just show, man. He's got some go.
No.
I was impressed. That's legit strength.
That's a real 500-pound chain that he brings to the ring.
Duh. I ain't an idiot.
Every week,
you think I don't know that? I got a number two. I got to find it. Oh, it's the Scott Casey, Barry Horowitz, Jake the Snake, Dino Bravo mix-up bamboozle whatever.
I wanted to say a little bit about that Jake thing, so let's get into it.
Scott Casey versus Barry Horowitz. Scott Casey is the equivalent of watching paint dry as a wrestler. That's his character.
I just watched this morning, and I'm trying to think of that guy's like face or what he looked like or
it's
anything.
Stupid. It has a mustache. He has a mullet. He's another cowboy. He's another outlaw. He's another whatever.
It's like I got Men in Black, Matt.
Yeah.
It's like there was something cool about Scott Casey.
Yeah.
And then Tommy Lee Jones came and flashed that thing in my eyes. And now I just can't call up any memories of seeing Scott Casey.
Good afternoon. Please give your attention to my associate, Agent J. He's going to demonstrate an electro-biomechanical neural transmitting zero-synapse repositioner. We call it the Neuralizer. Keep it simple, Slick.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Agent K. Ladies and gentlemen, if you will, look right here.
Yeah,
it's gone.
That's his wrestling style.
It is gone.
That is his wrestling style. This match went on for so long.
Maybe I fell asleep during it legit.
You got to have, you got some sweet Barry Horowitz healing it up a little more than he regularly does.
I do like me some Horowitz.
Which is okay.
On the reg.
But Scott Casey is so boring that it completely cancels that out.
Just none of that face fire.
So,
get behind.
You sit through this match, which again, felt like a lifetime. And then what's your reward?
Oh, a guy who people actually want to see wrestle.
Yeah, the last
is going to come out for 2 minutes,
30 seconds of his time limit draw.
So this is what I wanted to talk about, and just I want to talk about what the fuck was this? Because we're joined in progress. It's clearly the end of the match because they're both selling that they got beaten on real bad. Jake's getting beat on. Jake's getting beat on. He's just getting smothered by Bravo, and then he's. Does a real fired up comeback and his punches are just great. It's just all he's doing is punches, but he's whipping the crowd into a frenzy with him because they look great.
So damn hot.
Yeah. And it's very dramatic, very just like big in his movements, and they look like they're connecting. They look great. And I'm like, oh man, this is clearly going to be some kind of angle they shot here. So that's why they're showing it to us. Like something happens at the end of this Jake and Dino match. So like we're just going to get the end of it so we can do the storyline stuff. But then it ends in a time limit draw and then it's just over. And it was like, oh, the 20-minute time limit has expired. And then it was like, you showed us the last 2 minutes of a time limit draw? Why?
After you made us sit through 15 minutes of Scott Casey and Barry
what
Horowitz?
What the fuck? Yeah, if you're going to fill all this time, just show us all of the Jake match.
Yeah.
And then don't show that Barry Horowitz-Scott Casey one at all.
At all.
Literally, I just feel like they had this episode cut together and realized that there was a minute and 45 seconds of just dead air in there. Like, they didn't quite make it to the end.
What do we got? What do we got?
Just literally pick a minute and 45 seconds of anything and just stick it in the middle of the episode. That's my only explanation for why we saw this, because it served no fucking purpose.
No.
Join something in progress and then have the end be a time limit draw?
Yeah.
The whole point of a time limit draw is you see all the fucking shit the guys go through.
And you're like,
get to the end,
sons
and you're like,
of bitches are
these
tough.
Guys are so evenly matched, blah, 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 etc. Yeah. If you don't see all that, there's no point in seeing any of it.
You're my
stupid.
Blah, blah, blah,
just stupid. The whole time I was watching this fucking thing this morning, I was like, I got chores to do today, man.
Why am I doing this to myself?
I got a lot of gym time to get in. I got to clean my whole house from top to bottom. My life's a mess right now, and I'm spending a fucking hour and a half sitting watching this garbage.
I'm glad you cleaned up in here. I peed all over on the fourth. Mm. Just all over.
Yeah, I noticed. Started warping the wood floor in here. That must have been a lot of pee.
But don't judge. I'm on medicines. There was a really cool spot in this match with the minute and 45 seconds that we got to see. Jake locks in that DDT. Mm. He's like, I'm going to DDT this asshole. DDT. And again, this shows how important that move was back then and how much people sold it. Like, they knew, like, this motherfucker hits this, that's it.
There wasn't a single person
die.
Left in their seat once he had that, like, fucking front face lock locked in, like he was going for the DDT.
So he locks it in, and Dino Bravo, a real ring general, I guess, runs Jake Roberts backwards into the ropes, which was genius.
There you go.
Because he's like, psh, you're tied up in the ropes,
now
pal.
You gotta break
what are you
that hold.
DDT me into the second rope? It's not going to work.
Yeah, DDT me right out of the ring.
Yeah.
And we're going to get another count out ending here, which I would have preferred.
It was a really cool spot. I enjoyed it.
I would have.
It was smart.
Been much more creative.
The ring psychology of it.
Well, yeah, he's got that ring awareness. That's what comes of having a Frenchie Martin on the outside, you know, looking over your shoulder.
What's that? What's that? Get that up.
Barking your orders and letting you know what to do.
Yeah.
Everybody should have a manager. I don't know why only the bad guys were smart enough to do it.
And then the snake came out.
Yeah, the crowd likes seeing the snake. So
they
I guess
that
maybe
shit.
That's legitimately the only reason why we saw the minute and 45 seconds of this was just like, all right, we got to kill some time. Show Jake and his snake. The kids fucking love that shit.
The kids love that shit. I got a number three. I don't know what you're on. Are you on number...
Yeah, I'm going into number three,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Boone and Sharp.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into it.
I wanted to talk about how this is a big disappointment to me. Really like what I've been seeing of Brady Boone.
Mm-hmm.
He's just been, you know, he's fast in there. He hits the ropes hard.
Yeah.
He busts some ass. I always love what I see of Iron Mike Sharp. He's always taking a great whooping and showing ass and being a coward and screaming and hollering, and boy, they just didn't have their timing going on.
No.
Just Boone was trying to do too much stuff.
Yep.
And Sharp was too big for it, so they were fumbling and
their
timing was wrong on everything. They just kept having to stutter and stammer and like get back in line and like try to redo stuff again.
We had a
not on the same page.
We had a sampling of this from Mr. Boone last or 2 weeks ago or the show prior to that, where he wrestled two matches, and one of them...
I remember the episode of two Brady Boone matches.
And one of them was just its own botchamania. And then the other match was like, okay, this is the Brady Boone we know.
Hit or miss with Brady Boone. That's why I'm starting to realize, I mean, a little bit short, but great physique. You know, he's got all the ins with that Billy Jack Haynes familial relationship.
Yeah, hell yeah.
It seemed to me like this guy would have been
poised
a much bigger thing, but maybe we're
greatness.
Just seeing that he didn't have the consistency. He did not have the consistency that I want him to have. At one point, I was trying to call him the better of the Oregonian cousins.
I told you.
Billy Jack, though. I don't know. I guess he's that proverbial slow and steady that wins the race, whereas Brady Boone's that mythological Icarus flying too close to the sun. I got a lot of mixed metaphors going on here. You get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do, because, you know, my guy Billy Jack Haynes, he's more like a Steven Seagal type, you know? He doesn't have to
be. Interesting.
He don't have to be grease lightning fast.
Mm-hmm.
Man, kick your ass and kick your ass. He's still a ninja at the end of the day.
Iron Mike Sharp gets the win.
Well, hell yeah, it's big news.
And then we come out into the studio and then Gorilla's praising him?
Yeah, that was weird,
What
huh?
the fuck was that? Clearly, Iron Mike Sharp's a heel.
Yeah, but like clearly, you know, breaking kayfabe and all that, like these guys had to love Mike Sharp.
Yeah, what's not to love? I can see that.
Like he had to just be everybody's like favorite.
Gorilla, he's not supposed to let us see behind the curtain like that, man.
Yeah, but you
did. Watching Steven Seagal movies, he's never just like, oh, let me show you how I do all these elbow guys, breakings. And
these guys aren't really drug dealers.
Let me show you how I get my hair into such a tight ponytail every
I never want to see.
No.
No.
Leave a little magic,
yeah,
man.
I'll tell you a funny shit on yourself story. No, this isn't to be the guy with the shit jokes. Steven Seagal, right? Steven Seagal. I'm doing another movie.
What are you teaching Seagal how to do?
No, this is going to kill you. I promise you. It's going to kill you. So we're doing Ride Along 2. Cube accidentally punched one of the stunt guys
right
in the nose. Cube
right? Who's Cube?
Ice Cube. Another, I got to introduce you. He'll love it. he punches the stunt guy in the nose. Stunt guy's nose starts bleeding. Cube is apologetic. Yo, man, I'm so sorry. God, I'm sorry. He's like, no, man, it's okay. Like, at least you're nice. You know, like, I know that it wasn't intentional. We've worked with people in the past that have been just dicks.
Right.
So he's like, who? I'm like, who else? He's like, well, Steven Seagal, you know, he used to really get shots in, you know, in these scenes. So got to a point where we had to come to our boss, you know, the stunt coordinator. We were like, hey, man, Steven's really hitting us. Can you kind of tell him to
sound,
you know,
like his wife?
Down, right?
His wife said the same thing, didn't she?
He's like, you know, can you tell Steve to relax a little bit? So Steven found out that one of the guys was like a black belt in judo, like a serious black belt. So Steven comes up to the guy. He's like, hey, put me in your best hold. I bet you I can get out of it. And he's like, I can't do that. You know, you're my boss. I can't do that to you. He's like, put me in your best hold. He looks at his boss. Because Steven was being a dick, the guy said, go ahead, do it. Choke Steven. Puts him in a chokehold. Right? Steven's struggling. His feet squirming. He's searching for balance. He can't. It's like he's losing air a little bit. But, you know, you got to tap out when you don't want it anymore. So all you hear is... all you hear is... He taps out and goes, good old. And he beelines to the bathroom. He comes out. It smells like shit everywhere. The guy choked the shit out of Steven Seagal.
He's marked for death.
And literally all you heard was...
How satisfying is that when the asshole on the set shits his pants? How great is that?
Okay, there's a writer that I know, and I won't mention his name, but he was meeting Steven Seagal for the rewrite, for the writing, potentially, for Under Siege 2.
Right.
The, you know, and that was the one that broke him when it made
right.
$57 million, when that was $57 million
right.
in the early 90s. And so he goes into one of those trailers, you know, to meet with Steven Seagal, and he's on the set, and it's one of those big... triple bangers where you go into this trailer and it's like you can get lost in there. It's a maze of pop outs, you know. It's like, which pop out is Steven Seagal? And he's in the third bedroom to the left and the end of the
big star.
And he's waiting in there for 45 minutes. He's making him wait, sitting there by himself. Finally, Steven Seagal emerges from one of the other anterooms in the mobile home and he comes out and he said, I just read the greatest script I've ever read in my life. He goes, really? Who wrote it? I did. But I will say there's a newer one, and I think it's even superior. It's this has happened. I just heard that because I collect those stories like jewels. Anytime there's Steven Seagal story, like I love the Jamie Presley one. Where I'm an expert in shiatsu massage. Please let me massage you. You know, you told me that one. And she, next thing you know, she's having her boobs grabbed on by him.
I'm an expert in shiatsu.
Let me give me those titties, baby. So anyway, he's doing a movie. He's doing a movie with Keenan Ivory Wayans.
Right.
And I did one, and that's where I heard Keenan tell me this story. I hope he doesn't mind me telling this story. But Steven Seagal had just met with the Dalai Lama. And apparently, if you give enough money to the Dalai Lama's charities, eventually you get something out of it. Right. And so the Dalai Lama made him a deity.
Wow.
A god. Some Tibetan Buddhist.
Must have really appealed to his ego.
Oh, yeah, no, it must have. No, you're so anyway, he comes to the set after he makes you the dialogue, and he comes, now he's a god. He comes to the set, now he was Steven Seagal, now he's Steven Seagal. Now he's Steven Seagal, the god, the deity from the Dalai Lama. Wow. And he comes to the set, and he's there, and Keenan says, so what? I just met with the Dalai Lama, and he, in his wisdom, decided to make me a deity. And he gives him the quang, karang, the drang, the ding, the dong, the dong, whatever. And that's, I feel a difference. I feel like an enlightenment, the sense of that I can do something now. And everything just seems to come into place for me spiritually and in my career. And I feel like it's certain things now that never made sense to me make sense to me on a universal level. And his assistant comes up to him and says, hey, Steven, your ex-wife called. You can't bring the kids over this weekend. You tell that fucking cunt. If she doesn't get those kids over here, I'll break her fucking neck.
Deity.
I was cast in the film The Glimmer Man, which starred Steven Seagal and Keenan Ivory Wayans. I was working the first day of the movie, first day, and John Gray, the director, comes in to my trailer and says, so, how's everything going? I go, well, fine, John, fine. We're having a problem. I go, what's wrong? He says, well, Steven Seagal has had a spiritual sort of crisis and sort of a spiritual awakening. He decided that he doesn't want to kill people anymore in movies.
I can't fight, man.
What do you mean you can't fight? It's a fine time to tell me now.
Warner Brothers is very upset. They say, Steven, I understand what you're doing, but you dance with who brung you. You kill people really good. Hey! And in this movie, you have to kill people. And he doesn't want to do it. The problem is, in the scene, I was playing a serial killer, and the whole scene is about him killing me. So John says, Steven Seagal is going to try to convince you not to kill you in this scene. Don't get into a conversation with him. Whatever you do, don't talk to him. He has to kill you. I mean, it's the first day of shooting. This is very difficult for all films and actors. You know, they want to see good footage the first day. I said, well, I'll steer clear of Steven. So we got called to the set, and that was the first time I met Steven on the set. And he came up to me, and he had that cool persona that, what do you think about this scene? And I was saying, well, Steven, it's pretty hard-hitting scene. In this scene, by the way, I play a serial killer, and I grab a priest, and I threaten to blow his head off, and then Steven comes in and ends up murdering me. So I said, Steven, it's a pretty intense scene. He says, I think it would probably be better if I don't kill you. I said, I hear you. And Steven says, I think it's just bad that we keep putting this violence into the world. I mean, we're creating a sicker and sicker society by putting this kind of thing out into the world. I said, I understand that, Steven, but this case may be an exception. I'm looking at my life as a serial killer, and I feel I'm trapped in this broken soul that I'm inhabiting. And it would really help me in terms of my reincarnational development if you could kill me, and then I would be able to leave this body and actually transcend into a better life, into a better body. You would actually be helping me. So I would be giving you a helping hand? I said, oh, you'd be giving everybody a helping hand. You'd be removing evil from the world. You'd be giving me a new chance at life in a new body sometime in the near future. I never thought of it that way. All right. I'll kill you in this scene.
I can't. You don't understand. Go ahead and kill me. Kill me. I dare you. Kill me.
Do it now or I will kill you. You believe it? One. This is God's house. Don't make me do this.
Please.
Don't.
Three.
And then. And I fall out of frame. 2 months later, I get a phone call from John saying, we have a problem. Steven started ad-libbing in the rest of the film how he's glad he didn't kill the guy in the church. Is there some way you could come back in and in ADR make it seem like you're not dead? So I go back in and I'm going to loop a scene and Kenan Ivory Wayans is standing next to me. He's watching what I have to loop. So this is what they have. They have me backing up to camera, Steven pulling up a gun, firing, my entire chest explodes, like my heart explodes, like blood flies out at the camera, and I fall out of frame, and smoke rises into the thing as Steven Seagal walks into the shot, and John Gray whispers, now right here, if you could say something to make it sound like you're still alive. I said, say something to make it sound like I'm still alive, like, it's just a flesh wound. I mean, it was like an Austin Powers moment.
I'm still alive, only I'm very badly burned.
I ended up shouting up, finish me off, you son of a b- Come on, don't leave me like this. Kill me. It was horrible. Kenan Ivory Wayans just looked at me and said, man, now we are in the realm of high comedy. And he walked off. In the end, I think they just left it to where Steven killed me.
So you started acting, how old were you when you started acting?
My first film, I was 11.
11 years old. So this is from, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is your first red carpet premiere.
It is my first.
Under Siege 2. That's Steven Seagal and Eric Bogosian.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And, times. What do you think Steven said in that moment?
Oh, who? I would love to know what Steven said.
I would love to know, too. I have no recollection.
Did he say, is there anything he said during the shooting that that sticks out for you, Seagal-wise? He seems very quotable.
Yeah, probably. Well, my favorite was at the last day of filming, and again, I had just turned 16 on this movie, and he said, you know, Katie, I've got girlfriends your age, and I said, isn't that illegal? And he said, they don't seem to mind, and I said, Mom! I'm not making that up. Steven, I love you.
Well, that brings us to this photograph, because this was taken... This was taken that very day.
Oh, my God.
Steven.
Mom?
Was... That's not Mom, is it? Because you're not paying attention.
Yeah, you can't see with the big sunglasses.
Yeah, you don't remember. He was getting his handprints, well, not just in the cement over there, but he was getting his handprints all over you. I'm sure it looks worse than it actually was.
I have no recollection of that moment either. And I think we know why I blocked it.
Role you're most embarrassed by.
Oh, role I'm most embarrassed by?
Is it Exit Wounds?
No, I loved Exit Wounds, man. Was that with Steven Seagal?
Yeah, I just brought that up because I wanted a Steven Seagal story.
I got a great Steven Seagal story. Do you want to hear it real quick?
I want to hear Steven Seagal story.
Okay, Steven Seagal, a great man. Great actor. I mean, this was his big chance. Joel Silver produced this movie. This is a big movie. And was it DMX? DMX and Anthony DMX. Anderson is my partner in this movie. And Anthony Anderson, I have great chemistry. Hilarious. But and Andre Bacowiak, I got to get his name, was the director. He's this brilliant director. And we were shooting on a houseboat up in Toronto. And the director said, well, let's practice. Let's rehearse this scene one time. It's kind of complicated. Mm-hmm. We're sitting around. It's DMX or whatever. And Steve Seagal's like, I don't rehearse, man. He goes, no, seriously, just for camera, will you let us rehearse? No, let's just shoot it. Let's shoot this. And he goes, okay. So anyways, he starts. And Steve Seagal's like, Well, I will tell you one thing. And he starts to get up. He goes, I'm going to kick all your asses. And he starts walking out towards what he thinks is a door.
Yeah.
But it's not the right door. It's the door that goes into the ocean. Okay? I swear. And I'm going to say, oh, my gosh, you're going to the wrong door. But then I know what's happening. So I'm like, holy shit, this is awesome. And he takes a step and he drops into the ocean just out of frame. And you know, at the time he colored in his hair, he had about that much black, like magic marker kind of thing. He's a great guy, by the way. And he wouldn't wear a hairpiece, so he just painted in. And if you watch the movie up close, you could go, oh my God, there's like an inch of black stuff. And he's like kind of fat for a muscle guy. Yeah. He's got very big wrists, so. And he's, you know, and he, but, and that, so I looked down and I was like, holy buddy. And so he comes up, he's sort of embarrassed, and because, you know, and the black stuff is ready up. But, you know, that was fun. That was great.
That's amazing.
That was a great moment.
That's
but
amazing.
I remember going, I should tell him. And I look at the director, and he's like, and then he walks, and then.
Last question on the list.
I love Steven Seagal. He's a good dude.
We believe you.
Yeah, he's awesome. And he's very sensitive. Mm-hmm. For real, like this, he's gonna hear about it. He's gonna say, "Why did you?" And I'm gonna be like, "Oh my God, it's an amazing story, buddy."
Man, I gotta watch me some Steven Seagal movies.
Steven Seagal marathon one of these days. I feel like. Other than watching that one with all the voodoo a few weeks ago, I haven't revisited his catalog in quite a while.
Yeah.
I'm ready to see some fucking Hard to Kill. I'm ready to watch some Under Siege again.
Yeah, I can't
remember
the last time I watched Under Siege, which means it's been way too long.
Out for Justice might have been the one with the voodoo that I watched.
I think so.
It's hard. All of his early movies had those same three-word titles.
Yeah.
And they're very hard to keep
straight.
It'll
be nice for us, though. I got a number four. You want that?
Yeah, let's go into it.
I liked the WrestleMania 4 report.
Is this where we announced the big 20-man
battle royal?
Yeah. Okay, because this is what's going into my number four, too.
All right. I know they do a million of these reports, but here's the difference.
They had a few of them this week, so I didn't know which one you were.
They do it every week. They do. They've pretty much worked their way into a formula where they do like the update, the WWF update with Craig DiGiorgio.
Yeah, he's doing
and then
great.
They usually throw to an interview in the middle of the show with Craig DiGiorgio that's live. And then at the end, they'll do the WrestleMania.
You're making him sound like much more of a Lothario than he is. It's
the WrestleMania
just Craig
report.
DiGiorge.
Oh, Craig DiGiorge, you're right. Either way, I enjoyed this one. And one of the things is, this is what WWF did right that WCW couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having people come out after every match and talk about the shit over and over and over again, just designate three areas in your show to be like, here's the rundown, here's the rundown, here's the rundown.
And also you got guys doing backstage promos where you can like
control
and redo it or whatever, and like they hadn't just gotten out of a match, so they're not sweaty and out of breath, and you could do those every once in a while and it adds some like real sports legitimacy to the thing. But in general, when you got guys cutting promos, you're gonna want them to like not have just wrestled a match and not be out of breath and
correct.
WWF, they're always in a studio, they're always backstage, they're always cut together well. So like, say if you got a Lex Luger here in 1988 WWF, he'd be cutting promos backstage, not out in front of a live audience,
correct,
sweating his ass off.
And another thing.
And once he got to his second or third and
another thing,
they would just edit that shit out.
Oh, Lex.
They would edit that shit out.
Maybe
they'd be like, hey, do that again, but not that part. And then it would come off much better once you get to that finished product.
Because
not everything is happening out there live.
I don't.
And in living color.
I don't ever remember the narcissist saying "and another thing."
Oh, that's a good point. They usually just had him look in a mirror while somebody else did his talking. Genius.
Wow. What a foreign concept. We got the 20 men.
Well, Squirrel gets a nut.
The names of our 20-man battle royal.
This is what excited me, yeah.
All right. We got Bad News Brown, Bret Hart, Boris Zukov,
Stout,
Brian Blair.
He's
Danny Davis.
He's crooked.
George Steele.
Crazy.
Harley Race.
The King.
Hillbilly Jim. Jacques Raju.
That white meat.
Jim Brunzel.
French Canadian that everybody loves. Oh, another
the
tag
other
guy.
B. Jim Neidhart.
Oh, more tag guys.
Jimmy Powers.
He's going to win this thing.
More tag guys. Junkyard Dog.
JYD, he's got a shot.
My pick to click, Ken Patera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nikolai
loves him.
Nikolai Volkoff, Paul Roma, Raymond Rougeau.
More tag guys.
Outlaw Ronnie Bass. The Wild Samoan Sika. And
he's a big man.
Sam Houston.
You got the youngster Sam Houston. Who now, had a real weird picture.
That's what I wanted to talk about.
Zoomed in on his dick.
Yeah, it was a big old
zoomed
dick
right
pic.
In on his dick.
It was a big old Sammy Houston dick
when
pic.
I saw it, I was like, ugh.
He's
why'd
doing,
they pick that?
He's doing like a readjustment of the trunks
he
where
really
he's like
is.
Pulling
he's
them back
his,
up.
Like, hands in his pants and which, his just dick outlined up.
But like you... It happens in matches. Like, their trunks hang a little lower, whatever, and mm-hmm. they readjust. Whatever. We all
yeah,
do it as human beings.
You don't take a still photo of that
but
and
yeah,
choose it as
right.
the image you go to yeah. hype a battle when royal.
You can see every inch of the man's penis.
Was,
and, like, the
ugh,
you can tell if he's
appealing.
Circumcised or not.
I really understand now what girls talk about when they're, like, talk about guys sending them dick pics and how off-putting it is. I'm just like... I don't know. Sounds pretty cool to me.
Yeah, I think you girls love that shit.
Sounds pretty sweet. People sending you a bunch of nude pics. Like,
yeah.
Awesome. What are you complaining about?
Yeah.
This Me Too shit's poisoning your brains,
yeah,
chicks.
Hell yeah.
But man, I gotta say, when actually face-to-face with a guy's dick, just unexpectedly out of nowhere,
yeah.
I understand
it was
now.
It's a little off-putting.
It could be very jarring.
Huh.
Oh, I wasn't expecting that. And then you give me a warning, like, dick pic incoming, and then
yeah.
it comes, I'm fine.
Hey,
I'm
just
fine.
So you know, I'm sending you a dick pic.
When it just comes out of nowhere, fuck, dude.
Sam Houston just...
Not the most attractive body part.
He just laid it on you.
It was weird.
Put that hurt on you.
But I liked how they went into the rapid fire, here's a bunch of guys who were in this match
right.
talking in a row promos.
Here's
like, everybody
why you
just
should
got
care
30
about
seconds
me.
Or whatever. They don't do that shit anymore. I think the last time I could remember is ECW used to do it all the time, where they just take a bunch of guys and have them do short promos cut together in a row. It's a good way to just, like, show off your roster and show how much, like, you know, personalities you got
depth,
going
yeah.
on. You got to get a little bit of this on our show. We got a little bit of that on our show.
Hey, here's a fucking reason to
something
care.
Something for everybody here in the WWF. We got something for everybody.
And what was the best part of all those promos?
Just the dick was all I could think of.
Yeah. It was Bad News Brown talking about it's going to be a Harlem picnic
mm-hmm.
with a Harlem barbecue.
He's really getting over how
but
from
like
Harlem
it.
He is.
Hell yeah.
It's very much from Harlem, that's for sure. I'm
you know,
going to have you know that.
Bobby the Brain was talking to him backstage, and he was like, hey, Bad News Brown, what do you call that kick to the back of the head you do? And he
uh-huh.
said, he yelled at him, he said,
yeah.
That's the ghetto blaster. I don't know why Bobby the Brain Heenan told us that story, but I was glad he did.
Well, he's just trying to get over, you know, the fact that he knows cool guys.
That's
like,
the ghetto blaster.
Hanging out backstage, you know, I'm hanging out with Bad News Brown. I'm hip.
Yep.
I'm with it.
He's one of the best.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to look
if
up
he's
here.
He's really from
Los Angeles, California.
Yeah, there
I was going to say. Because I knew he wrestled a bunch up in Calgary. So I'm like, I doubt that he's from Harlem.
Right.
Says he's from LA here on this little Wikipedia. So yeah, you got him from Harlem. You got Booker T and his brother from Houston, and they're just like, no, you guys are from
Harlem.
There was something about 80s wrestling where they're just like, all black people are from Harlem. Ooh, you got a black guy who's not being built
it's
from
so
Harlem?
Facto.
No, you can't do that. That's going to confuse
stupid.
The audiences.
You want to talk about the last thing we need to talk about?
Okay. I don't really have anything else to talk about other than I was just like calling the Demolition versus Stallions match my match of the night.
Yeah.
It was the
That's
only
it.
Match that, like, everything clicked.
It's the only thing really worthwhile.
There wasn't a bunch of botches. It made sense. Like, the Young Stallions were trying to, like, come back and do some high-flying stuff to string some moves together.
It looked good.
But then Demolition kept, like, cutting them off and beating them down with their stomping offense.
It was a great Styles matchup. Stallions looked good.
Young, they made some good points on commentary, too, pushing the fact that Young Stallions are a couple of young, good-looking, high-flying guys, much like the current tag team champions, the Demolitions fighting at WrestleMania 4. So once again, this is a match that made sense. You're showing, like, these guys are against dudes who are like who they're going to fight.
Yeah.
But then they had to cheat at the end. It was like, nah, they should have just put them away and been like,
right.
ooh. They've got fucking Strikeforce's number.
These are killers.
They just beat fucking the poor man Strikeforce, the Young Stallions, right now.
You reminded me that my line of the evening was in this match.
Oh, okay.
When Vince McMahon and his genius commentary.
Yeah, we had Vince and Bruno and Jesse on commentary.
The best three-man booth in the business.
So it was a little bit of a love-hate relationship.
Somebody wake up, Bruno.
Match.
These guys are good wrestlers, and they make it the... The Demolition.
Match is okay.
The Demolition.
but I gotta listen to Bruno while it's happening.
I'll tell you, the demolition, these guys, the demolition.
That's all he kept saying.
Yeah,
was the demolition.
Great wrestler back in the day, from what I understand. Not much of a commentator here in 1988.
But the line of the evening, Vince McMahon going off on one of his Vince McMahon logic trains, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, Jesse, talking about Strikeforce here. Mm-hmm. Tito Santana and Rick Martel, they both formerly held tag titles, to which Jesse says, yeah, and they do right now.
That's true.
What kind of point is that?
Also, I don't know if it was right after that or another point where Jesse's just like, hey, Vince, if you didn't become a wrestling commentator
right after,
what do you think you would have done with your life?
Yeah.
And then solid 12 seconds of dead air.
Vince is fuming.
Yeah. A little lost for words now, aren't you?
I could set up a wrestling ring. Oh, can you drive a truck too, Vince? Because then you could drive the wrestling ring.
So there's a little peek into an alternate universe where Vince McMahon didn't become a pro wrestling announcer, so he just drove the truck. Might have all been in a better place right now.
Just Jesse Ventura week after week.
Pro wrestling might not be dead right now if that
Jesse
was the case.
Ventura kills it, and he just calls out Vince all the time.
Yeah, he's the one guy that just like doesn't give a fuck what he says to Vince. He just needles him.
He's the reason Vince bullies everybody on commentary.
It's probably true.
He's got to be the fucking reason. Like, it's all just built up, pent up
Michael
frustration.
Cole, for the last 12 years, has just been hearing all of Vince's pent up Jesse Ventura aggression coming through his ear set.
You're a little
poor little wiener. Poor little wiener, Michael Cole.
Well, we did it.
Yeah, we got to the end of that five count.
Yeah.
So I tried to pick a fun three count to make this episode not just be a total bust. So
just something fun for you.
Hopefully we'll go into that.
Just a little fun thing.
After some commercials.
Pay some bills. Baby oil and blow.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Who on earth? Could put the creamy taste of Cool Ranch flavor on a chip. New Cool Ranch flavored Doritos brand tortilla chips. Nacho cheese was just the beginning. Now, taste new Cool Ranch.
We're here at an athletic shoe store to see people's reactions to this sneaker phone from Sports Illustrated. Now, the only thing is, we're not going to show it to them. We're going to let them discover it for themselves. Come on.
Go ahead, you pick it up. Is anybody there?
Hello?
The sneaker's ringing. I've never saw anything like that. Did they all ring? This is a phone.
Tony, get a load of this. Come here, look at this.
I can't believe it.
You like that?
Yeah.
A sneaker phone, that's great.
Sports Illustrated presents the Sneaker Phone. It's yours free with your paid subscription to SI.
Hello, Chief. This is Clark.
Oh, honey, you won't believe where I'm calling from.
The Sports Illustrated Sneaker Phone works just like a regular phone. It has push-button dialing, mute button, automatic redial, an on-off switch, and of course, it plugs into a standard jack.
This is a sneaker phone?
Great.
You like that?
Yeah, how much? It's free.
Free?
Nah.
The Sports Illustrated Sneaker Phone is yours free. Just subscribe to 30 issues of SI for three low monthly installments of only $14.97. That's over 45% off the cover price. So call the toll-free number on the screen now. Of course, the subscription includes the NFL and NBA previews, the year-end double issue, the revealing 1991 swimsuit issue, and the free sneaker phone.
It's free?
Free.
They're free.
They're free.
Fantastic.
What do you mean it's free?
It's free.
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 You're pulling my leg.
I wouldn't pull your leg.
Great.
You heard it here first. Everybody loves the sneaker phone from Sports Illustrated. And so will you.
Call now to subscribe to Sports Illustrated at over 45% off the cover price and get the sneaker phone free.
Hello?
That's great.
I didn't have time to write any clever music because I've just been thinking about the Harlem Heat song this entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
3-3-3.
Count. Baby oil and blow.
Getting into this three
just
count.
Just whisper everything. It's pretty cool. That was like a rap thing for a minute when all the songs were just like, yeah, girl, I'm with some, yeah, yeah.
Are you talking like a mid-90s LL Cool J type thing where no. everything got sexual?
No, it was like early aughts, I want to say.
Like back when like LL Cool J and D'Angelo were doing shit and like everything in rap just got real sexual for a while.
Yeah, if you didn't have hard dark chocolate abs, like you didn't have business in the rap game.
You know, I don't think LL ever had much abs, but he was...
Yeah, no, but
he had those like, big plump lips. He was licking all the time. Actually, he got pretty cut at one point.
Yeah, no, he got cut.
I forgot
about
that.
That was late 90s.
Yeah.
Mid-late 90s, he got cut.
I think like...
Same thing with like Busta Rhymes.
I think early 90s, he was just kind of like a big dude, but then he got some nutrition going on. He was personal trainers or whatnot after he started doing that Deep Blue Sea type shit.
All those dudes got pretty big because then, like, 50 Cent was pretty big. He was pretty swole.
Got to keep up with the Joneses.
Tupac always had that, like, scrawny jail bulk to him.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Just saw a nice Tupac movie, Juice, the other day. Oh. He looked like a tiny little baby in it.
Tiny little babe.
Didn't look a day over 16.
Told you I'm
poor. I was realizing, oh, that guy died a couple years after this. He probably never looked anything other than just, like, a tiny little baby.
Yeah, that's fair. He's like 20, what?
People turn these people into icons and they're just stupid little kids, essentially.
Yep.
Little dum-dums.
He was a stupid little gangbanger. Got caught up in stupid little gangbanging stuff.
Seen a lot of those in my day, Matt. It never ends well, let me tell you, kids.
And then he got turned into some kind of martyr? Nah, he's just a scumbag.
You're right. I also prefer Biggie.
Same thing with Kurt Cobain. He was a scumbag.
I don't know. That guy at least like was into some cool shit.
Yeah, these people are all scumbags.
He's like, hey, I like some cool music, you guys. You should figure out what
I always
like.
Been
and
that
you
way.
Could like that too.
Jim Morrison, scumbag.
Yeah, but Jim Morrison was a poet, man.
No, he's a scumbag.
He's pissing all over everything great in the world.
He's just a drunk scumbag.
Yeah, I don't know. His dad was in the Air Force.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
take
he
that back.
Comes from. Good stock.
Good stock. Good peoples. We're not here to talk about Jim Morrison.
We could be.
Or Kurt Cobain and Jim Morrison.
I read a couple
of
Jim Morrison biographies
together.
When I was like 13. I got a lot of knowledge.
I could just do Jim Morrison noises the rest of the show if you want.
That is pretty cool.
Just roll around on the ground over there.
Just.
Da-da-da-da! Just weird yells
some lyrics
and screams.
About Egypt and stuff over here. Be your Ray.
Take my pants off. Jim Morrison it up.
Three count.
Yeah.
This week, it's going to be this whole fantasy scenario.
Yeah, buddy.
Coming up with fantasy scenarios. This is, you know, people like that fantasy baseball and shit.
Yeah.
And they're just like, ooh, let me put together my team that's not a real team and see what happens.
Yeah.
I don't know. Take like stats and collate them or something, and it tells you how good your fake team did.
Right.
This sounds stupid and boring. I don't understand why people like that so much.
But then we realize you watch a really boring something like this week's episode of Primetime, and you start
there
to dream, what's something I would rather see?
Yeah, I gotta juice this up in some way. I'm not legally allowed to bet on it yet. I think that's coming. So for
now.
Oh,
and we can
I'll
legally
just
bet on wrestling?
Yeah, that's it's got to be coming soon, I think.
I guess people do.
I think, yeah.
We should look into that.
A bunch of different laws around sports betting just got struck down or whatever, so that's going to be good for us. But until then, we're going to get lost in some fantasy scenarios here. Just a little few
what
ifs. So, you know, threw the question out there.
I kind of liked it with all the flying and the magic.
Tag teams. What are some dream tag teams that would have been a good idea back in the day, but just never happened?
Nate, you hear about
these guys you could put together, it'd work out great, but it wasn't meant to be.
You hear about all these potential dream matches. How about a dream tag
team?
Yeah,
a dream partnership. I feel like everybody watches wrestling so negative. They're always like, I want some dream conflicts. I'm like, no, I want some dream cooperation.
These guys
could
take on the world together.
In my dreams, these guys are just hand in hand, just supporting each other, yep. always there for each other. You know, I got your back. I'm going to pick up the slack when you need me to. Oh, you tired? I'll drive tonight.
Who's going to drive you home?
King Kong Bundy.
Oh, wow.
No, he's not on my list.
Yeah, no, mine neither.
But, yes, I do have six guys on my list, three teams.
So do I.
So let's get into this right now. I'm dying. Dying to hear what went on in that beautiful mind of yours when you started trying to pair together guys. And
you know, Rick Ocasek, lead singer of The Cars, met his wife.
Did you read a Rick Ocasek biography when you were 13?
He met his wife on the video shoot of Drive.
Uh-huh.
And also,
who is she? Just like a gaffer or something?
The supermodel that's in the video.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, he's ugly as hell.
Yeah, he's not an attractive man.
And also, that's not a Rick Ocasek sung song.
Uh-huh.
That would be
the other guy.
Benjamin Orr, the bass player. He also sang Just What I Needed.
The other guy.
Yeah. But here's my teams. Benjamin Orr and Rick Ocasek were a great team. Here's a better team. What do I like out of my wrestlers, Nate?
Buns. Just hot man buns.
Hot man buns.
Taut man buns.
I like guys that aren't afraid to take the easy way out. Guys that aren't
scallywags.
Too scared to cut a couple corners.
Scoundrels.
Guys that aren't afraid to make a lot of noise when they're in the ring. Let you know if they're in pain or if they've been wrong.
Real Kurt Cobain, Jim Morrison pieces of shit. Yeah. That's what you're into.
Yeah. So I came up with a team of two guys that can make more noise than anybody else in the ring. And they also have a little bit of a big guy, little guy dynamic, which is one of my favorites.
I know you like that.
I'm going with Iron Mike Sharp and the Funker, Terry Funk.
That's very strong.
What kind? Come on. That's a heel tag team right there.
I was throwing around maybe putting Iron Mike Sharp in a tag team with Dick Murdoch as just big, sloppy, despicable guys that nobody would like. But I like your
Canadian
yelling
redneck
angle on this.
Yeah, an American redneck.
You got the
I can
two guys
that.
That yell the most while getting beat up and just make the most wounded animal noises.
And they're different kind of yells, too. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you got...
going to get a whole cacophony of shit going
on. Mike Sharp yells when he's in control, too. And
he sure does.
It's a different thing all around.
I'd like to do some stuff too where Terry Funk's not quite the heel that Sharp is. So Sharp's always trying to walk out of the matches,
and
but then
Funk's
Terry's gotta plead
with
him.
Come on, Mark.
Oh, you gotta come
you
back.
Gotta get back in
God
the ring.
Damn it, Mike. We gotta finish this match.
We gotta win, damn it.
Funk's constantly pleading with Mike
Sharp.
There's
so many layers here, man. Could yell for so many
Sharp's
reasons.
Sharp's the reason they're always losing their matches, and Funk's just pleading with him to get his fucking...
Because he's always doing that walk half backstage
get his head
bit.
In the game and just straighten his shit out. You got so much potential. God damn it, Mike.
If you put the straps on these guys for 6 months,
fans
would hate you.
I would be in heaven. But
they'd
those
paying.
1980s
they'd
pro wrestling fans.
Paying to see any baby face take these guys down.
Build up to a big blow-off where Terry Funk's finally had enough. And, he's just like, I got to drop you because you're not picking up holding up your end of the bargain.
Yeah. I just stay in the ring and get beat down really badly and cry the whole time while you walk away.
Just between a giver and a taker. Yeah. And you keep trying to snuff out my light, man. You're stealing all my energy. That's a great abusive relationship storyline.
Yeah.
Just pop off. And then you got Terry Funk, Iron Mike Sharp matches. I would watch those all day long.
All day. There's nothing I don't want to see about that. Mm. So that's a dream team for me.
That's a really great dream team.
Thank you.
I feel like that could have taken Iron Mike Sharp to heights he never reached in his career, which is something I really want to see.
He was a tag team champion with his brother.
So I'm going to go into my
next one,
which also has Iron Mike Sharp in it.
Nice.
Because I wanted to do something for the man. I wanted him something that could be good for him. So I figured I got to take the best of the North and the best of the South, which is George South. And I had to team them up, calling these guys the working class zeros.
Oh.
In there, Iron Mike Sharp.
Oh, man.
He's got all the personality.
I see what you did there.
He's got all the hollering. He's got all the spitting and the stammering. But he's just kind of a big sloppy brawler. That's a little bit of his weakness. George South,
straight
great
man,
worker
ring
in
technician.
There. Great worker. He's in there.
Straight man.
He can wrestle
ring
the
technician.
Bulk of these matches. And then you just bring Mike in when you need to.
Ringmaster General.
You need to spice it up a little bit. George South.
Just a hot tag.
Always a little bit too small to get a push anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, he's a great worker. You get a big guy, little guy dynamic going here where he's just running off on his mouth and then hiding behind the big guy.
You put together something nice
You
here.
Really start hating this guy because, if I could just get my hands on him, I could take him out. No, he's always
that,
hiding behind that Mike Sharp,
he's
though.
He's got that Canadian bully.
Yeah, I feel like these guys, if they could just get in the same territory at the same time, maybe their losing ways would turn around. You know, to quote Rocky Balboa, you know,
he's got gaps, I've got gaps. Together we fill gaps.
Fill gaps.
I feel like
I also went to school with Phil Gaps. He was
a
good guy.
Beautiful marriage. If you talk to him, tell him to say hi to his mother for me.
Well,
she did a lot for me back in
when
I was a kid.
Solid woman.
I like that we both felt the need to put Iron Mike Sharp in a team. Like, that was one of the things I knew going into this. Like, I got to do something for Iron Mike Sharp. I got to put him in one of those classic Road Dog Billy Gunn.
Yeah.
Like, you take two guys who aren't quite making it, and ooh, maybe there'll be something if we stick them together in a tag team.
Maybe.
I mean, don't get me wrong. He was something. He's the greatest wrestling jobber of all time, but I just don't understand why he wasn't the greatest wrestling heel on a main event level of all time.
I kind of went the same lines you did with your last team.
Mm-hmm.
Where you took two guys that never got the credit that they deserved, right?
Let's get them together.
But I took two guys.
Make beautiful music.
Never got the credit they deserved. Also, never in the same territories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they had one thing in common.
What was it,
an
man?
An innovation of offense and a lack of size.
Okay.
And I'm going with two
of
my favorites.
I think I got at least one of them.
Mike Jackson.
Yeah, I knew that.
And Brady Boone.
Oh, Jackson and Boone. Little jumping beans. Team of jumping beans.
Why did everybody like the Rockers and the Midnight Express? Or the Rock and Roll Express?
Fast-paced, high-flying
action.
Moving
around, kicking you at the same time, this and that. You going to tell me you put old man Mike Jackson in the ring with... Maybe I'm on drugs and not landing shit.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm on point Brady Boone.
Maybe I need a old man who's on the straight and narrow to, get me to the next town and keep my head in the game.
It's hard to flip by myself, but it's easy to just hit a kick with another dude and make it look easy.
Definitely.
You know?
If there's anything Cirque du Soleil has taught me, it's that flipping and stuff's much easier when you got, like, other guys that can flip off of.
You just have an old, faithful, dependable dude that you could just flip off of. Because you practice
leathery,
it.
Just a leathery man.
Oh. His.
Maybe
Mike
you get
Jackson's
these guys under a couple
skin?
Masks so you can't see how old Jackson is.
No. Leave it out. Yeah, I want it out there. If Brady Boone is Billy Jack Haynes' cousin, I guess like Mike Jackson could be like their uncle.
Oh, we're going to do like some kayfabe, like Andersons and Ric Flair,
he's their
cousin
uncle?
Type relationship shit in here. I could see that. Yeah.
He's a little older. He's their uncle, their Oregon uncle.
Or maybe just like the street dad who took them in.
They
were orphans.
Right.
Yeah.
They were cousins that grew up as brothers because their family died.
Yeah.
In some kind of Oregon.
That man lived in a cabin out
fire.
In the woods.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I'm going to teach you of the forest.
I'm going to teach you about wrestling and ninjutsu.
You do a lot of little vignettes, like training type vignettes where he's got him out doing weird forest stuff.
Hurrah!
Sounds real good.
Nothing's gonna have a bring you down. Oh man, shit writes itself. We're really killing it.
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder like why nobody is reaching out and being like, I notice you're really good at writing professional wrestling scenarios. We have a professional wrestling company. We'd like you to please come and just handle this for us, because
we don't
everything
we're
putting
we're
on TV week after week is the same boring bullshit over and over again.
It's the same shit.
Nonstop.
Yeah.
Just save us from ourselves.
Come
please,
up with something new.
Baby Oil and Blow, save us from ourselves.
We're out there. We're listening, man. We got stories for days. 7 or 8 of them.
At least.
Yeah.
So going into my next one, I had a couple of guys. lot of success. These aren't a couple of jobbers that are going together, but I still feel like if you get these guys together, maybe they could have done more than what they did. Taking my first guy is Junkyard Dog.
Oh.
So he's a big success in Mid-South Wrestling, maybe as much of a success as you could possibly get. And then he goes to the WWF, where he's still a very popular guy. He's thought of as a top-level guy, but, you know, he's slower, he's fatter, he's not really the... He's never a workhorse, but he's... You know, even more of just like a sloppy sort of end of my career type dude. He still had all the personality and all the gimmick. So what he needed was somebody to step in and do a little bit of the work for him. Put him in a tag team. Somebody who can, you know, go out there, bust his ass, add some credibility to him. Maybe give somebody some personality to play off of. That's what I'm saying. You're putting him in there with Coco Beware.
Oh.
80s pro wrestling loved to throw two black guys together in a team. I'm calling them the Pet Shop Boys. You got the Dog and the Birdman, dude.
West End Girls.
Yeah, you got JYD. He's out there. He's got Thump on his butt. He's barking. Coco's doing all of his, like, sweet gospel singing. These two guys got fucking personality for days. One of them's crawling around on all fours. The other one's flapping his arms around like he's a bird. Maybe two of the most pure baby faces I could think of. I feel like these guys would complement each other well. Coco could leech off of some of Dog's credibility. Dog could sit back and let Coco do some of the work out there in the ring.
So you're essentially, your idea is for Vince McMahon to make a face Jive Tones.
Yeah,
his own version.
He should have been watching that WCW television and being like, God damn, these Jive Tones got something.
That's a great thing right there.
Demolition, his answer to the LOD. He could have had the Pet Shop Boys as his answer to the Jive Tones. These guys could have been out there, you know, Dynamite Kid's fucking crippled, so our big babyface tag team doesn't exist anymore. You got another dog you could put right in there.
Yeah.
Have him fight the Hart Foundation a million times.
That's a good idea.
Coco could have had that like WWF tag team title run under his belt. And then when he got inducted into the Hall of Fame,
people wouldn't have laughed so much.
Maybe everybody wouldn't have been like, why is Coco in the Hall of Fame?
Because he's a goddamn workhorse. That's right.
He was over. He was beloved. He could sing. Got the title track of that Pile Driver album.
One of the best.
It's my number two.
That's a solid pick, sir.
Got one more left.
Really good team.
It's going to be a big one.
Yeah, mine is as well.
Just warning you right now.
I went for a really big team here. You got to have a team. You got to have a real team here, all right?
Sometimes there's a man.
Sometimes there's two men.
I don't want to say a couple of heroes, because what's a hero?
Now, I'm going to stick with a bad guy team, a heel team,
because
it's what I love.
You love your bad guys.
My bread and butter. What makes a good heel team? Why do we like... the Horsemen. Why do we like, Tully and Arn? Because
they
so much?
Won all the time.
Right. Because they talk dum-dums. Shit. They talk shit to you, and they could still back it up.
Yeah, like that Kid Rock song. Cocky.
Yeah, hell yeah.
That's like
didn't know where we were going.
One of my top five Kid Rock songs.
Yeah. I saw you picture today. Yeah, it's a good one. Why do people like the Outsiders?
They came out and acted like they were cooler than
everybody
else.
They're talking shit, and they're just backing it up.
They just buried everyone else on the roster.
So I want two dudes here.
Mm-hmm.
They can just talk shit all day. Just talk the shit. And then back that shit up all day.
Sound like a couple of high-class individuals.
And they're going to be the greatest bad guy team of all time. And I'm talking about Sir Dusty Rhodes and Mr. Hulk Hogan.
The two biggest heels on
in
every
business
fucking episode of this show we're doing. Just cocky assholes.
Yeah.
Just
talking shit.
Putting themselves over everybody else.
Yeah.
Just being real petty about everything.
Yeah.
Over the top flamboyant. Probably they're going to be wearing some of
fur
those
coats.
Fur coats that Dusty's buying.
Yeah, making Magnum TA wear.
Hulk's going to get him some like those like custom spandex outfits that
right.
they're going to wear under the fur coats.
Well, here's the thing, brother. Those same people that made Dusty his $5,000 boots, maybe these $8,000 onesies.
Well, I hear you saying about these one of these Hulk Hogan.
Oh.
If I can address your attention to this $10,000 piece of jewelry I got here on my wrist.
Well, that's a real nice watch right there, brother. But this chain right here is made out of a dead baby elephant and cost $80,000.
I understand you spent a lot of money on that Hulk Hogan, which is very impressive, but let me show you some pictures here I got of that African safari I went on the last 3 weeks. We are shooting all sorts of endangered species.
This feather in my hat is pure pterodactyl.
I hunted the most dangerous game, brother, man. We're killing hobos.
This skin's
in Guatemala.
This skin's made out of real skin, brother.
One-upsmanship.
This skin I'm wearing is made out of real skin.
One-upsmanship would be out of control. And all that backstage politicking, I find one team who could ever get a win on these two, ever. I don't see it happening.
No one would, but the only good news is there's no way that team could keep itself together for long.
90% of their offense would just be those Hulk Hogan back rakes he likes to do.
Oh, yeah.
Hulk Hogan back rakes.
And then the other 10% is weird dusty dances.
Yeah. Maybe every once he'd take off his belt and whip people with it.
Oh, yeah. That was a big face move of his.
Big face move. Those guys, such good guys.
Yeah.
They're the best among us.
I was reading some shit about how they almost wrestled in Japan back in 80 whatever.
Oh, when it would have meant something?
Yeah.
Before Dusty came up north and got humiliated by Vince McMahon.
Instead, like, whoever was booking in All Japan was like, nah, I want Hogan versus Gordy.
This guy's fat. I'm going to make him a comedy routine.
Yeah. But it was funny because from what I understand, Vince was pushing for Hogan versus Dusty.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then since I guess he never had to give it away, he was like, ah, fuck it. You guys a joke. Look what I'm doing to you.
Yeah.
Your company's bullshit.
That's interesting. I would have liked to see it. I was thinking about good guys to throw together. For a second, I was thinking like Dusty and JYD were two of the most charismatic guys.
Sure.
Then I found out they had an awesome tag team feud in Houston against Ted DiBiase and Kamala. So I was watching some of that this morning. And
I was like, wow,
this is good shit.
Should have told me about that. I would have rather watched that
today. This did work. Yeah, we should
had our podcast be about that.
Maybe we should start digging up good stuff and just watching that just like on purpose instead of subjecting ourselves into whatever this weekly program happens to have in store for us.
Special Baby Oil and Blow Good Stuff Week.
In sort of going along with that, I was doing a little research, and my number one team, they did actually team together.
Oh, okay.
But it was, you know, on a house show. It was some house show shit. Fair. It was never like a thing where they got a run. They were packaged as a team. And I feel like if they would have gotten that run, or they would have got packaged as a team, it would have been great shit because they were real life best friends. They were both great wrestlers. They were both totally legitimate, awesome heels.
Okay.
I'm putting together Mr. Perfect, Ravishing Rick Rude.
Oh.
Calling with the Minnesota Smirking Crew because they're just a couple of cocky, smirking assholes.
You son of a gun.
We got a little bit of them in the 90s WCW, but unfortunately it was after Rude couldn't wrestle anymore, so it was just him standing behind Hennigan in a suit, but it was still great. These guys got great chemistry. You can tell they have tons of fun just being dicks together.
Yeah.
If you could have taken them both when they both could still wrestle, they were both when they were in their primes, they could have been the mega just heel team that the WWF never had because they were always pushing faces.
Yep.
It was never a heel territory. But you get these guys together, man. You have them start feuding with like Hogan and Beefcake or whatever.
Ooh.
Once Hogan was like, oh, Beefcake's my tag team partner, my brother. We got to get him in the main events. That would have been some great shit. They could have held those tag titles for like a couple years. It would have been fine.
Yeah.
Just those two feeding off each other. Because they both had their IC title runs and whatever.
Right.
But you look back, and that's all a heel could get back in those Hogan days. It's just an IC title run.
A crumb. Just a little crumb.
That's all you were, getting crumbs. It doesn't reflect enough on what top-notch fucking just wrestlers both these guys were. What legends they both were. You look at their accolades. Shouldn't have been a lot more. So throw some sort of record-breaking tag team run on top of that.
Macho Man had to turn face just to get a little accountability.
And he still just kept chasing that Hogan dragon the rest of his career, just picking up Hogan's scraps. It's a real shame, the guys that came along in that era. And, like, I mean, not a shame for them, really, because they made a ton of money being on those cards with fucking Hogan, more than anybody else probably ever has. But just as far as opportunities to just be top-notch guys and have great fucking heel runs, like, if they were wrestling anywhere else, any other era, any other territory, like, these guys would have been main event-level guys.
That would have been quite the team, man. Yeah.
Minnesota boys. I think they went to high school together even.
Nice muscles on those boys.
One couple of blonde, jacked up dudes.
One's brunette. You could do a real like Tango and Cash kind of thing with them.
It was nice before Rude cut his hair. They both had that kind of just gross, long, curly hair.
Right.
Look good.
Right.
One of them poofy, one of them greasy. And they were both briefly part of Heenan family together.
Yeah.
So, you know, they kind of transitioned from one into the other. They didn't have, that's when I saw there was a tag team match I saw a little hype for in 1990 at the Nassau Coliseum. It was Perfect and Rude versus the Warrior and the Texas Tornado.
Oh, I was like, God.
Ooh, that's a dream.
That's
got to
be
right
just
there,
fucking
man.
Brutal, man.
If I could go back in time to the Nassau Coliseum and watch that one.
That crowd had to be fucking hot.
I'd be in hog heaven.
Could you imagine, like, you just fucking transition perfect into airbrushing his singlets?
I like that idea.
Bam. That's right there. There's your tag
team.
That's
why Warrior gets mad. He's like, hey, I had that idea. I wanted to start wearing airbrush singlets.
Nah, you should have had Perfect doing it when he's teaming with Ravish and Rick Rude. We put together three,
I want to live
six total
I wanna
million
live
dollar ideas
where you could watch all these different tag teams fight together.
Take 5 seconds, step outside your product, and just take inventory of what you got.
Yeah, just be like, how many guys on my roster can I compare favorably to Iron Mike Sharp?
Yeah,
these days it's probably not many. You modern wrestling promoters need to get your heads in the game.
You can't pull one slightly strong slob to the side and be like, you got to start yelling.
Yeah,
more.
I notice you don't spend much of your time just rolling around on the ground, clutching things and hollering.
Stone Cold told Kevin Owens to do it, and now he's a superstar.
Also, I saw several points in your match where it would have made sense for you to pretend like you're leaving the match.
Yeah. Because you're fed up. You don't need to put up with this shit.
That's,
instead, you just gutted it out. What are you trying to prove?
Not a very good way to get people to hate you.
You shouldn't have to prove anything.
Being in there looking like you're trying your hardest and pulling off cool shit.
So find us on the social medias. Anything.
We're all over it, man.
Anything at Baby Oil and Blow.
Just Bing Baby Oil and Blow and you'll find all of it.
Just give us a loose, just one fucking sheet of legal paper with your roster on it. A rough description of who's doing what. And
we're going to send you back
all
sorts of tall tales. Just, you get these personalities bouncing off each other. These stories write themselves, or they should.
We're going to turn your characters into something. Why? Because we're better than you are. Is that the point of this?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's very... It's still in that cocky heel mode.
Yeah, I'm still in it.
Get out of that and get back into podcast host
Join
mode.
Us next week when we talk about...
WCW.
Dave Crockett
we're
and the
back
boys.
Back there. WCW, March 12th, 1988. Their episode. I've got my fingers crossed. I think it's going to be a good one.
Bated breath, pal. On Baby Oil and Blow.